guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Line rushes today at practice. First line remains the same with Bergeron between Marchand and Pastrnak. Good news, Rick Nash with the concussion, back on Krejci's right wing. So Krejci, Rick Nash, and then on their left wing, Jake DeBrusk, which is where he's been most of the year.
They reunited that group, yep.
Then they had a third line with Brian Gionta at center between Backes and Heinen. Basically, Gionta taking the place of Riley Nash, who remains out with that gash in his ear, 40 stitches in his ear.
From taking that shot off the head.
Okay, and did you just play the cut where Cassie said he looks like he's more probable for Thursday?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so Riley
Nash...
Didn't
sound too confident in saying it, but...
Okay, so Riley Nash still out, so Gionta takes Riley Nash's place as that third-line center between Heinen and Backes, who've been in that spot the entire year. And then because Noel Achari is out for a maintenance day, they put Tommy Wingles next to Corrali and Schaller.
Right.
Donato was the odd man out. Healthy, odd man out. So Ryan Donato, who has 9 points in 12 games, plus 2, 5 goals, he might be their leading scorer in the last 12 games. Maybe that's what I should have asked the stat people to do. Who's the Bruins' leading scorer in their last 12 games? Can we do that? Last 12 games, who leads the Bruins in scoring? It might be Donato.
I bet you it's him or Krug, probably, but go ahead.
Donato has 9 points in the last, his only 12 games since he's gotten here. 9 points in 12 games is plus 2, so it's not like he's a minus on the ice. He's the extra forward. What are your thoughts, Miss?
Okay, so I initially hate it. I don't want Gionta in there over Donato, but I don't think that's what it's about. I think that way back when we were discussing this thing, rather, it came down to three guys for two spots. It was Heinen, DeBrusk, and Donato for two spots. One of them was going to end up watching, and it feels like they picked Donato. Now, I've given this some thought. I want DeBrusk in there. To me, you can't take DeBrusk out. I just think DeBrusk, relative to those two guys, Heinen and Donato, DeBrusk is heavier on the puck. He's a better puck battler. He's tougher. He's a good forechecker. All of that. I want DeBrusk in there. So it really comes down to those other two. I'd pick Donato over Heinen, but it's close. It's close. Heinen's playing better again lately. So, you know, to me, that one is a borderline coin flip at this stage. They clearly don't like the fact that, or they don't like Donato's size, if that's what you want to say, coming up into the playoffs.
Oh, no, that's good to put Brian Gionta in there then, because that'll really take care of that size issue.
Dojo, I don't like the Gionta thing either.
He's better than Heinen, Achari, Sean Corrali. Like, it just comes down to this. Does his offensive talent outweigh his inexperience? The answer is yes. So I would think he would be in there. It does feel cloaty. It was annoying to hear.
So Gionta's not going to play either, though. Riley Nash is going to bump him.
Okay, so... Well, let's hear from Cassidy first. Here's Cassidy today at practice describing Donato's availability here and the rationale behind whether he's going to play or not.
It's always difficult reading into the last couple of days before a game, but looks like Donato might be the spirit there.
He could be out.
How difficult is that if that's the case for you, just given how good he's been on the power play and the offensive punch he's given it?
Well, I'll tell you, without going through every scenario, well, let's say Rick Nash is in. Rick Nash is a power play guy in front, did very well there for us, did very well in New York, did very well in Columbus. So we're not worried about the drop-off there. He's going up with Krejci. We like DeBrusk back there. So now Ryan, was on that line on his offside. So there is a very proven, replacement, because I don't think it's a fair word to use here. So that's where Ryan, could lose his spot. Then it becomes, we drop him down in the lineup. We like our fourth line, so now it's a question of, is it him, Backes and Heinen? Is it Achari, as Wingles goes in? So that's when the next phase of it comes in. Then the last part is, how many young guys you think can go into the lineup at once and we sustain our level of play because it's, the second season. So we factor all those in.
Okay, how many young guys can you put into the lineup?
Yeah, revealing.
Said Claude. I mean, again, I keep mixing that up. Said Cassidy. All right, so here's how I think. When Donato first came into the lineup and was scoring immediately, what did I say? I said Jake DeBrusk better be on his horse, because to me it was always going to be Donato or DeBrusk, because that third line all season long, Riley Nash, David Backes, and Heinen was fabulous. Fabulous. And all things being equal going into the playoffs, I bet Cassidy would want to keep that together. I don't blame him. I don't blame him wanting to keep Heinen, because that for a big part of the season that was the backbone of the team, the heart and soul of the team were those third and fourth lines. It really was. So you want to keep Heinen together with Riley Nash and David Backes, no problem. And even that fourth line, Corrali, Schaller, and Achari, huge like DNA of your team was that line. You don't want to mess with that. I get it. So to me, it was always going to come down to between DeBrusk and Donato on the left wing of David Krejci. And if they want to go with DeBrusk over Donato, I'm fine. So this I'm not going to lose my mind if Donato's out of the lineup in place of Backes or Heinen. Because again, the whole point here is young talent and do what brought you here. And if one young guy's beating out another young guy, okay, fine. I can understand that. If Brian Gionta gets in the lineup over Ryan Donato, then I will puke on my shoes. Because you can't tell me. The only thing Gionta has is experience. He doesn't have size. It's not like he's any better in his own end. So he's got experience, so he's going to be a little smarter and maybe just have a little bit more of a clue. But they're both tiny. They're not defensive players. And Gionta, as I watch him, is freaking invisible. I'm sorry. He's invisible. Gionta, in his last 12 games, one assist, 1 point, minus three. In the same point where Donato's had 9 points and is a plus two. And not, one's not bigger than the other. One's not anything. So what if Donato, and I would add Wingles to that as well, because not like Wingles is this great grinder. I mean, he, a little bit more of a fourth line player than Donato is, I'll grant you that, but mostly because he sucks. But not because he's like some sort of like dirt dog grinded out physical presence. He's just sort of a borderline NHL player, so he's more of a fourth liner. He knows he has to work hard, so he does, I guess. I don't know. Wingles and Gionta, all things being equal, should be on nine, and they should be your injury replacements. And then, as you said, Maz, it's between DeBrusk, Heinen, and Donato. They're all young kids. They're all part of your future. Something has to give. If that's Donato, fine, I'll accept it, because at least he's losing his spot to two young guys who are part of your future, not Brian Gionta. Like, this is comparable to if Gionta's in and Donato's out, like that is, they had this in the last year they won the cup, except it was Mark Recchi and Tyler Seguin. People forget the only reason Seguin got in is because Bergeron got concussed. I think at the end of the Tampa series leading into the Philly series. So the first couple of games, remember Seguin in the first couple of games of the Tampa series? Like he was shot out of a cannon?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I want to say it was game five. Didn't they win it like 6-5?
It was the first couple where Seguin flashed here at the Garden. And that's because I believe Bergeron was out those games because he got banged up at the end of the Philly series, I believe. Other than that, Seguin had been losing his spot to Recchi. And I remember pulling my hair out with Mark Recchi, who couldn't put the puck in the ocean and was getting power play time. It's like, Claude, stop this! You know, I just remember this. So, but like, if they do the same thing here with Gionta and Donato, oh, please. Come on.
So you'd have a right to lose your mind over that one. I'd be shocked if it comes to it. I think Gionta's going to get bumped by Riley Nash. And they just have the young guy. Maybe they don't want to mess with the young guy's confidence or something. Like I don't know. So they're making that decision now. And maybe they, you know, in practice, they want Gionta to play Nash's role because he's a more suitable replacement. But to me, I don't think it's going to matter. I think it comes down to those three guys at the wing. I think Gionta's going to get bounced as soon as Nash is ready to go, and it sounds like it's going to be on Thursday.
This is fine. You want to tell me Donato's losing time to DeBrusk and Heinen? Fine. These guys have been here all year. They've contributed. They're all young. That's fine. Don't tell me he's losing time to Gionta or Wingles. I don't want to hear that. All right, so add this to the list of our Patriots items, and we'll get to you right after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blunt force trauma to run him right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Last year, your team was considered an underdog against Washington. Yeah. Is it fair to call this team an underdog this year against Boston?
Well, I think they got more points than us, so we're the underdog. And saying all that, they believe they're going to win, we believe we're going to win. That doesn't mean we think it's going to be easy. We don't believe that at all, but we think we got enough in the room and that we have to find a way. The other thing I'd say to you is that the spring is real short for most teams, and you know, we don't want to be short. We're having fun. So if we want to keep playing and hanging out together, we got to dig in.
Leafs coach Mike Babcock, give some of his sound. We go 4 in the next 2 weeks. It's like checking with the other guys. Who should be favored in the series, Mass?
Bruins.
Yeah, and they are. Bruins are minus 145 on the series, and they sort of vary locally. The number I got from my sources was minus 145. You look nationally, it goes from 150, minus 150, minus 155. The MGM Mirage has them at one, minus 165. So the Bruins are pretty solid favorite. And when you look at the odds to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they got to be what, third or fourth?
Second.
Holy crap, behind only Nashville?
They're the second team to win the Stanley Cup, yeah, in terms of odds. Predators are plus 400. Bruins are plus 550. The Bruins are even ahead of the Lightning at plus 600. Odds to win the Stanley Cup. Predators 1, Bruins 2, Lightning 3, Golden Knights 4, which I'll book that for anyone who wants to bet it. I would sell. I would sell on the Golden Knights like you read about. I'll bet against them in the first round. So the Bruins. So the so their slow finish there has not gotten in the way of Vegas.
That's too high. They shouldn't be number two.
Pegging them as a favorite, and they're certainly favored in this series. So, which Mike Babcock seemed to indicate there. But anyway, okay. You know, what do you want them to do with Ryan Donato and our Brady discussion on the table with you, Rich in South Boston on the Pats. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, what's up, guys? I got two things, one on the Pats and one on the Bruins. Listen, remember the Super Bowl parade when Gronk was pleading, can I come back next year? Can I be on the team next year? Please let me be back on the team. Now he's a big baby. And with the Bruins, just remember in 2 weeks, Frank the Tank said that they're better off playing Toronto because they're going down.
Okay, I think stylistically it's a good matchup, I do. That they're wide open and... You know, if the series comes down to who can just play a little bit better D, I think it's the Bruins. So in that standpoint, I think it's a good matchup. But I just don't know what they're going to be with the money on the table. I don't know what they're going to be under pressure. If the other night was any indication, then you should be scared. You should be scared crapless. Because this is a team that has not always been great under pressure over the past couple of years, and I don't know if this one's any different. I don't know if this team's any different.
I worry about the Bruins' D core under these waves of forwards that the Leafs are going to send at them. That's what I worry about. So you want to tell me the Leafs are weak on the back end? Fine. They are going to throw wave after wave after wave of forwards, and they're fast, which means I worry about Chara in this series. Like, to me, this is a bad matchup for the Bruins. I don't like it.
Here's Bob in Easton on the Crafts. Hi, Bob.
You know, when it comes to the Patriots drama equation, I'm like Good Will Hunting, okay? And what I mean by that is it's tough to listen and watch you guys fumble through this.
Oh, I thought you were going to say overrated and didn't age well, Bob.
No, well, all right, Mario, that was a good one. But what I mean, I've been consistent about this, as one guy said on the show, I think. I've been consistent about this for weeks now. I called you a week and a half ago, and I told you that Kraft is coming around because he realized he made a huge mistake with Garoppolo and siding with Brady. So what you're seeing here is Kraft realizing, as a businessman, in the best interest of his team, to be with Bill. Bill Belichick is going to be here for more than 1 year, guys. And I'll tell you why. And the other thing, too, they're not sticking it to Brady. They're not going to do anything like that. So stop with the whole TMZ thing. Like, well, if they did this, this would stick. There's no more of that. They've done what they've done. I think they're just going to do this and play it out. That's what the Patriots do. That's where they're different.
Well, so, yeah, no, Bob. They're going to do what's best for the team, but in doing what's best for the team, it may not align with Brady's interests. Like, not signing...
And I agree with you there. And
I mean, not signing... Let me just finish. Not signing Nate Solder is the perfect example. I mean, you help out Brady if you sign Nate Solder, but that's not a smart move for your team. So they're not going to bend over backwards to do what's right for Brady.
And you know what? And bend over backwards, I think, is kind of a... I hear what you're saying there, but I think now Brady is just... This is hard to say this, but he's just another guy. And here's the thing. Gronkowski, isn't it weird? And I don't have an agenda yet, but you notice that every other day, the stories keep coming out that the friction between him and Belichick are even worse. And I'm telling you guys, Kraft now has, well, Belichick, I should say, now has Kraft's ear because he realizes that, and Toga, you know this, you admitted this and you agreed last week, this thing is not a 2-3 year thing anymore. This is something where he knows Brady's gone, and I will admit, Kraft is miffed. This is something that he definitely stuck his neck out and invested in.
Is that something that you're, Bob? Is that something you're hearing from your sources, or you just assume this?
I'm, you know what? I stick by what I say. I stick what I said 2 weeks ago, and I'm telling you, it's going to happen. I'm telling you right now, it's going to happen. But I just find it ironic that, as people say, well, as Schefter, the guy who said that, you know, I'm not going to blame Schefter, but as Schefter says, oh, this means that Gronkowski and Rapoport, he's no, that this means that he will get traded, but every other day we keep hearing Gronk stories.
I got you, Bob. I have to cut you off there. Bob's sources tell him that Gronk's gone, just FYI, in case you didn't know out there.
I mean, it is interesting, though, that, like, you know, they've had these meetings, okay? But the stories are still coming out that Belichick undressed Gronk in practice. Did that come from Bill? I doubt it. I mean, I doubt that came from Bill.
Right.
I mean, to me, it feels like that's coming from the Brady side or the Gronk side. So, like, you know, well, this is what Bill did. See, look at what Bill did. You know, but Bill did this. Bill did that. It doesn't feel like the thing is rectified. That's for sure.
It does not feel like the thing is rectified.
I mean, Gronk is still waging a war.
Well, look, I told you, and I don't want to say like I told you so, but I felt this from the start, that you'll know when things are smoothed over when the contracts get smoothed over. And it sounds to me like the Patriots aren't even going to address Brady's contract. Again, Kraft's thing says, well, he's going to be 41 when the season starts. Again, that's a big red flag, adding a year to his age. But then he says neither side has an issue with it. If it becomes an issue, we'll deal with it. It's not an issue. I mean, it's not even an issue on the best of days. They can handle Brady's $22 million cap. It's not going to get in the way of anything. But the offseason's over. There's no more big spending. There's no reason to lower his cap number. And next year, in the final year of his deal, the caps are going to go up again even more. And I haven't looked ahead to what their you know, money forecast looks like, but it's easy enough to carry $22 million. It's nothing.
Okay, so the question, though, is did the Patriots want to redo it before? And Brady said no, before free agency started.
Well, so again, according to Jeff Howe, that there's been no negotiations of note. Okay, Brady most certainly would entertain contract negotiations, according to a source. So it might behoove the Patriots to take a more proactive approach. But there haven't been any negotiations of note to this point.
Yeah, this whole thing still doesn't sound good. I'm sorry. Like, I believe Greg Bedard when he's in here, and he says that Brady doesn't seem in any rush to do the contract.
And I would agree with that, too.
So, like, I hear that and say, was this part of the reason they lost Solder?
But by the same token, if I'm the Patriots, I'm not giving him any new money. I'm not extending him when he's talking about asking why we're doing this and reassessing, you know, year to year and the family stuff. I'm not giving the Patriots, if I'm them, I'm not giving Brady any new money either. Ryan and Nashua on the Bruins. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call again. I just want to say, like, one way or the other, the Bruins very concerning, but I think it's still going to be a very exciting series coming up. But most importantly, I think what gives me more joy is the fact that this is another Montreal-less Canadiens. And I know I absolutely agree. I love that you get a kick out of it each and every year as well, too. So
Ryan, whenever I'm feeling down, whenever I'm agitated about something or something just isn't right, I think about the Montreal Canadiens missing the playoffs under Claude Julien, and I instantly feel better about myself. I do. I have that in my back pocket. I have that.
They finished with the fourth worst record in the league.
Oh, my God.
Fourth worst.
After, and especially the battle that was waged over whether they should let him go or not. Oh, the local hockey guys, how vehemently they hung on to Claude and told me what an idiot I was to see him go to Montreal to a better team on paper than you were to start the year and to miss the playoffs. That just that confluence of Claude and the Canadians, just who, I don't care who their coach is, anytime they miss, it makes me happy. Those two things, it brightens my day whenever I have it in my back pocket whenever I need it. It's a wonderful little thing. It really is.
It's going to be some good young talent in the division next year. But Buffalo, Ottawa, and Montreal all picking the top four. Well, there's a lottery, right?
Yeah.
So if it stays the way it is.
But I'll tell you, the Bruins should be good. I mean,
should be a good series. I agree.
Toronto plays up and down the ice, and they have suspect D. I think both goaltenders are questionable. And I think that the Bruins' D, while it's better than Toronto's, it is a little heavy and flat-footed. And what I mean by that is, if they're going Chara, McQuaid, and Kevin Miller, who's okay, who's got decent mobility, but certainly isn't, you know, a blazer. Certainly, you know, Chara is not a good match for that Toronto style of play.
No, it's bad. I mean, that's what I was saying. I'm worried about Chara in this series. It's not a great matchup. Young, fast forwards. And they're going to come in waves. I mean, they got 10 of them, for crying out loud. Like, they are going to come in waves.
So they throw Chara and McAvoy out against the, you know, Matthews line. Does he play with Marner or, you know, whoever? He's playing with someone young and fast. And so it's like, Usually you throw Char out there against the big gun on the other team, but if the big gun is 5 foot nothing, and I don't know how tall Matthews is, but he goes a million miles an hour, is that really the right matchup there? Like, so I think there's going to be, I think it's going to be an offensive series. It should be an entertaining back and forth series, even with the Bruins' supposed advantage in back and in net.
Felger and Mazz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mazz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Then the last part is that how many young guys you think can go into the lineup at once and, you know, and we sustain our level of play because it's, you know, the second season. So we factor all those in.
Bruce Cassidy following practice today for the Bruins. If Claude said that, just picture if Claude said that.
Oh, God. I mean, again, to have Junta out there. I can understand why you feel the way you feel. I look at it, though, and I say, it's not going to come to that. That Riley Nash is bumping Junta. This is about Heinen, DeBrusk, and Donato. It's about those three guys. One of them's getting bumped, and it's Donato.
Look,
I just want to know exactly why. Like, and again, because look, Heinen's played well of late. I like DeBrusk. The more I watch him, the more I like him. So like, you know, to me, DeBrusk is more playoff ready and playoff built than Donato is. So that one I like. But I would love to know what they really what they really see in Donato.
I'll tell you. Well, but it's not just in a vacuum of Donato. It's those third and fourth lines were just sort of textbook, exactly what you want out of third and fourth lines. The fourth was just pure energy and crash and possess the puck underneath the other team's goal line and just work the back of the, like, and Ryan Donato's not a fourth line player.
No.
He's just not. He doesn't profile as one. He doesn't have the grind. He doesn't have the. It's just not. He's a skilled player. He's a scorer.
Right, but why Heinen over Donato?
Let me finish. The third line has been at a textbook third line, which is someone that plays in all three zones, but you get some scoring out of, and can really use in any situation. And with Riley Nash between Backes and Heinen, that's exactly what that has been for a large part of the year. That was their second best line. And so Cassidy says, well, I don't want to mess with that. Heinen works with those guys. And again, that line is as much defense as it is offense. It's not quite like the fourth line, but it's somewhere in between your scoring lines and your fourth line. So there's a lot of defensive responsibilities and all of that. Am I doing that with Donato at 19 years old and 12 games in the NHL? So I don't blame Cassidy for looking at that either. That's why I said from day one, it's about Jake DeBrusk. Because Donato, if he's going to play, it's on a scoring line with Krejci, and it's on the power play, and it's that role. So it's always been, for me, between DeBrusk and Donato.
Yeah, I include Heinen in it because they've sat Heinen at times this year.
They have.
Not that they haven't sat DeBrusk, they've sat him too.
But I'll tell you what.
But I extend it to include Heinen.
I think the Heinen sitting came in and around Backes injuries and or Riley Nash injuries, I think, if I'm not mistaken. When that line has been, when Backes and Riley Nash were healthy, and Heinen, or maybe this was when Riley Nash was up on the other line because Bergeron was out. Maybe that's when it was. Riley Nash moved up and played between Marchand and Pasternak, and Heinen was without Riley Nash, is may have when he got in sat. When they've had Backes, Riley Nash, and Heinen together, that's been a really good line all season long. So I don't blame Cassidy on that.
So I hope you're right. I'm not telling you I have a problem with it. I would just love to know their thinking. And I want to know. To me, there is a deficiency in Donato's game that they don't talk about. And look, if you talk to people around there, they'll tell you he's not a great 200-foot player, right? He's
not even close.
So you know, to me, that's got to be a big concern for them. And I would just like to hear him say it for some reason.
I just hated the lines today. I hate the thought of Giunta being ahead of Ryan Donato. That's what I hate. Or Tommy Wingles being ahead of Donato. That's what would get me going if on Thursday night one of those two are in and Donato's out. That would be a disgrace. Dan in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, guys.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Let's do this. Let's get an expert opinion. Let's do a three-minute interview real quick.
It's time for the Felger and Mazz three-minute interview. Let's go! Talk!
Joe McDonald covers the Bruins for the Boston Sports Journal. He was down there today. Joe, do you think it's really a possibility that Ryan Donato is out of the lineup, and do you agree with that decision?
Yeah, Michael, I think Ryan Donato will be out of the lineup 2-4 game one. And I heard you guys earlier talking about Brian Giunta. Look, the reason why Brian Giunta was in the middle between those two guys in that third line was because Cassidy wants that chemistry in practice between Backes and Heinen, so you just slot Gionta in there only for practice purposes. That is it. Brian Gionta is not going to be in the lineup come Thursday. So what happens is Riley Nash, if he goes, he slides right back into that spot. Ryan Donato will be out for game one, but listen, just because he's not playing game one doesn't mean we're not going to see him in this lineup as this series progresses here. So, you know, Cassidy is going with what got the team here to this point, and we'll see what happens with Donato. But to start the series, he's not going to be in the lineup.
Joe, is Toronto a good matchup for the Bruins or a bad matchup?
I think it's a great matchup. Well, first of all, from an entertainment standpoint, right, if you're a hockey fan, this is going to be an unbelievable series. It should go seven games. But the one thing that we've learned about these two teams this season, Maz, is that Toronto is fast. I mean, they have their forwards. They have the ability to get the puck behind the defense and really crash. Their forecheck is outstanding. It's very potent. And you can see Cassidy's not concerned, but, you know, his preparation today at practice, he was working on a lot of, you know, neutral zone drills with the forwards because they need to control that neutral zone and they need to control transition in order to win the series because, as you guys talked about earlier, I mean, Toronto, they're fast, you know, and the Bruins defense, even though it's been better of late, I mean, they're going to have a tough challenge.
Okay, Joe, it's a three-minute interview. Time for one more. We have a minute left. Here's my question. How come everyone who covers the team thinks Tuukka Rask is awesome, and everyone else who watches the team thinks he sucks? Well, why is there this big divide between Tuukka Rask? And it's really drawn light down the line of those who watch and those who cover. Why?
Well, the thing is, the one thing that obviously has not come to fruition for Tuukka Rask is the ability to win a Stanley Cup. He wasn't able to win that game in 2013. He struggled in big games in the past, and this is a huge postseason for him. I think that, you know, he needs to take this team deep. And look, he is a product of the team in front of him. When they're playing well defensively, he's at his best. Has he been at his best for the majority of the season? No, but look at the numbers. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's won a Vezina trophy.
Numbers don't win games, Joe.
You're absolutely right. But the thing is, he needs to make those timely saves, Michael, and I think he's done that numerous times this year. But look, I'm not here defending Tuukka Rask. I still think he needs to be at his best to take this team deep in this playoff. So one way or the other, I'm not saying he sucks or I'm not saying that, you know, he's the savior of this team. He needs to be at his best in order for this team to win, and I don't think we've seen it yet.
Thanks, Joe. Read him in the Boston Sports Journal, 317. Not bad.
We're done. It's over. Leave. Goodbye. Stop talking. It's finished. No plugs. Hang up. Concluded. Terminated. Get out. We're through with you.
I still think that's a little harsh, but you get the point.
We got to condition our guests so shorter answers.
So, but you hear Joe McDonald there, Boston Sports Journal. Ryan Donato's not playing on Thursday night.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
105 remaining, third period of game seven. The Bruins down by one. Lucic behind the Leafs net. Ward trying to work it loose. Lucic right corner. Yager right wing Ward. Now Bergeron. Left side to Krejci. Bergeron straight away with a rush shot and he scores! Patrice Bergeron ties the game with 50.2 seconds left. Hand out of Patrice Bergeron over the blue line to the right circle. Bergeron driving wide, takes it in behind the net, out of the left wing circle, drops it off for Sagan to the bottom of the circle, spins and puts it on net. A stick save, Reimer. Boychuk right side, a wrist shot blocked.
Reuniting Sagan with this line here.
And Bergeron a one timer, save Reimer. Rebound loose at the top of the crease. Wrist shot score! Bergeron! Bergeron! In game seven, and the Bruins win the series!
Is it too much to say one of the great moments in Boston sports history?
No, it definitely is.
They didn't win the cup.
Still, they had no business even winning that series, it felt like, at that point.
How about recent Boston sports history?
So many championships. You know, like, I don't want to... This ain't the 67 Red Sox. You're not going to catch me in that trap, celebrating a team that ultimately lost. So I'm not going to say one of the great moments in Boston sports history, but a pretty tasty one. How's that?
Oh, it's for sure. The Fisk home run.
Good one. Fine. Well, that's a great comparison.
Yeah, that is a good comparison. Overtime game seven. Like, Nathan Horton's up there too, right? That one? Isn't that against Montreal? Was that in overtime?
They went on to win the cup.
Right. Right, it was an earlier round. No, it was the same round. Wasn't it the first round?
It was the
round?
First round, and they went on to win the cup. This was a year they did not win the cup.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, we have to get through all this. Anyway, that happened. So Toronto's back now, 5 years. There's only five Toronto Maple Leafs left. One of them's Gardner, who's the defenseman who gave the puck away to Bergeron there to score that goal. And so he's like one of the better defensemen now. But anyway, here we are 5 years later, back with Toronto in the first round. So we got to relive some of this stuff. We got to relive Murray's reaction to this because it is...
It's an all-timer.
Murray, at the time of this, a Boston guy, obviously, huge Bruins fan, Boston sports fan. He was doing overnights in Atlanta and was doing a radio show in Atlanta when the game was going on, and he reacted to it live on the air. We want to play that in a second, but I want to, just in the interest of fairness, because Murray sort of loses his mind, he's not the only one who lost his mind. And just in the interest of fairness, I thought I'd play me in an embarrassing moment. For Comcast, I was doing the Comcast post-game shows with Tony Amonte, and in the breaks, they keep the cameras rolling and the mics on, I guess, because they caught me in my little fanboy footy pajamas losing my mind when the Bruins came back in this game as well. So I think you hear the game tying goal, and then you hear the game winning goal.
Roll it there.
Oh, they tied it up! Get in!
Bergeron.
So they spliced together the two. The first one, thank God they don't have the video of the game tying one, because I do get up from the desk and sort of run around the studio a little bit. The one that they're showing is the game tying. If you watch on the simulcast, I keep seated because we have to go right on the air immediately, so I don't get up. But the game tying goal, I did get up, and you could hear me there. Oh, they tied it up! Get in!
Who got it?
Bergeron.
Okay, so
Vinny, that is great.
Vinny out at NBC Sports Boston wanted to ask, who was more obnoxious, me in that situation or Tony Mazz the other day when Giancarlo Stanton hit a home run in his first at bat as a Yankee? So if you watch on the simulcast, we've put them side by side.
No, it's definitely Mazz.
It's not even close. It's not even close.
Yeah, but we don't have the full video of you
and we don't have the full audio of you. What if we had the audio of this?
It's not even so much the dancing from Mazz. It's how you start with what you look like you're about to lasso a steer. You know, doing your fist pump like, yeah, here we go.
That was the home run signal. Circle the bases.
Not even close.
Get in!
Bergeron. All right. So it's like, all right. So that's a younger Felger. I'm not going to lose it in my pants, you know, anymore like that. That was the last bastion of my fandom. So there it was. There you see it. Anyway, nothing compared to what Murray did. So Murray's on, what station are you on now?
It was 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. every night.
Aha!
Yeah.
In Atlanta.
And it's mostly like doing a national show. I remember I was going to open up, start talking about Tiger Woods, who just won the Players' Championship he had just won.
So Murray comes on the air. It's a solo show, no co-host.
Right.
This is so good.
10 p.m., the Bruins just go to overtime, and he starts his show. Roll it.
Let me just start off by saying this. If you're not watching Game 7 playoff hockey, you really have no idea what you're missing. This what's going on right now at the Bruins-Toronto game in overtime, going on in the background here. This is everything good about sports. You don't necessarily have to be a fan of either of these teams. If you just like sports and everything that's great about it, competitiveness, this is where it's at, and just the high drama. And tonight you get the Bruins down 4-1, and half that half of the Boston Garden filing out of that place in anger when it was 4-1 early in the third period, and then they storm back with three goals to tie it late in the third, and now the place is bedlam for those that stayed, and there's 15 and change left in overtime. And I'll tell you right now, considering that I have the attention span of a gnat anyway, and that I'm a Bruins fan, it's going to be a little bit difficult for me to do the show
and pay attention to this game at the same time.
So stop right there.
The only other thing I can...
Did you hear his voice right there? Something happened in the game, like there was a scoring opportunity?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, there's frustration in my voice.
You can he could hear it there, right there. Something happened in the game right there where Murray almost lost it in the middle of his thing.
I'm sure your bosses love this.
No idea how much trouble I got.
As you're getting ready to do the show, you're basically telling your listeners, look, I'm watching the game.
Yeah, screw.
Go ahead.
It's going to be a little bit difficult for me to do the show and pay attention to this game at the same time. The only other thing I can say it's going to be like is if you listen the night that I was rooting against Hugh Darvish's perfect game. I know it's Hugh Darvish, but I just like to Americanize him and call him Hugh.
Stop there. Well, I heard that. I laughed. I'm like, yeah. Is that not perfect Murray?
Yeah. No, that is. That's our Murray right there. That's it. I thought the same thing today in the car. I said, it's exactly what Murray would say. Yeah.
Hugh. Yeah. Hugh Darvish, Hugh.
Well, yeah, I don't care. What a loose rules late at night.
H-U-G-H, go. Keep going, please.
And then I just I erupted like a crazed person when it got blown in the bottom of the ninth by the Houston Astros. It's going to be like that because if the Bruins pull this off again, being down 4-1 in the third period here, I'm going to lose my mind. And if they lose to this inferior Toronto Maple Leafs team, I'm going to get angry and I may have to swear. So be ready on that dump button there, Daryl. Thank you very much. Easy thing for me to do is start off the show tonight and throwing out the question that I'm sure has been asked by just about every single sports radio show throughout the nation today.
And?
Woo! There it is. Holy, oh, I want to swear so bad. Yeah, James. take that, Reimer, you bum. Wow, what an epic collapse. What an absolute collapse by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Suck it. Wow, holy. Oh, I want to. holy. Wow, huh? no, that's okay. You can leave it on. I'll have the restraint here.
Can you imagine Billy Bob driving around in Atlanta? Like, what am I listening to? What's going on?
Brilliant.
What's going on? Continue.
Wow, you have to feel like the biggest DB if you walked out of that place at 4-1. Holy crap. Wow, the Bruins just won it 5-4 in overtime. Who was that that got the game-winning goal?
Who was it? Jim Bergeron.
Wow. Again, nothing like Game 7 overtime hockey. This is a roller coaster ride that... who had this goal?
Who had it?
Bergeron.
It was Bergeron, Jim.
Oh, my God.
Bergeron.
Wow, that's exciting. Holy, oh. Yeah! Was Patrice Bergeron that got that goal?
Yeah, it was Bergeron.
Yep.
Bergeron.
Yeah. It was Patrice Bergeron that scored that goal. Wow, all right, with the game winner in overtime. The cardiac Bruins getting out of the first round against the Toronto Maple Leafs, 5-4 the final. All right, back to the, and this is the, and this also, the other great thing about hockey. You don't have to be the biggest hockey fan, but bang, this game's over. This is going to be heartbreaking for the Maple Leafs, and they're all lined up and doing the whole handshake thing right here. And I tell you what, if you follow me personally on Twitter, at Big Jim Murray, you saw me being all upset and acting like the sky was falling when it was 4-1 in favor of the Maple Leafs. Mm. Oh, that was amazing. All right. Sorry. Let me reset here. Let me bore you with Tiger Woods takes
back
now.
To Tiger Woods. A line that will live in infamy. Take that, Reimer, you bum. So, that will never be forgotten.
So you got in trouble for that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you ever see the movie Whiplash? It's probably not, because you don't get many of these references.
No, about the wine?
No, this is about
that's
the drumming.
Sideways, sorry.
Yeah, Whiplash is about the drummer who always had the teacher just, you know, making his life miserable to try to make him better. That was my life down there. My program director would literally have me air-checked almost every week, and I'd get screamed at time and time again. I'd leave there sweating. It was like someone threw a bucket of water on me. I'm like, I suck. This is the worst. So after this... Oh, God. So it was, why are you talking about hockey in a city that's lost two hockey teams? Nobody cares about this. On and on and on. So I go home and basically cry myself to sleep. And the next morning, I wake up, and all my social media accounts have blown up. I hear Touch and Rich have played it. You guys are making a thing out of it. I was like, well, maybe this was the right call. So ultimately, it turned out to be a good thing, because I think it's part of the reason that I'm here. So
it's the main reason you got this job.
Thank you, Jimmy. So at the time...
I didn't want to tell you that, Murray, but I think that's the reality.
Yeah, at the time, I was like, take that, Reimer, you bum. Yeah, that's what's going to bury my budding sports radio career, and it turned out to be a good thing. So yeah! Yeah, mother... Yeah! 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 Woo! There it is! And I believe when I say, huh, if I recall correctly, one of the producers said, shouldn't you get on track here? I was like, huh? What? Huh? What?
Can I just be a fan and enjoy this game?
All right. So one of the great sports moments in Boston history, one of the great sports radio moments.
Go.
Yeah.
Bergeron.
Oh, it's great.
Felger and Mazz. The Sports Hub.